Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right. Let's get started here. Levels okay in the booth, Reggie? They're good out here. Talent is ready. Let's just get started here. No BSing today. Just need to... Let's go. Episode 166. Put it in the books. Three S's. Star. Smile. Strong. Let's prove that by saying 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Whatever it is you do to find us, downloading, scrolling, clicking, we are right there at WGNplus.com. And don't forget, go to that landing page, go to the entertainment section on WGNplus.com, and hit Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, and you will see all previous 165 episodes listed there for you to go binge crazy over, which can only mean one thing. This is episode 166. Excited to talk to you today, as usual, because I've got some news that really has inspired me. Something that I saw happen recently in the news and got me fired up. Later in the show, we'll talk to Emily Arminetti about the recently released Emmy Award nominations and who we think will win and what we think are the interesting stories coming out of those nominations. The Emmy Awards will be presented in September, so we'll talk about that a little later, but right now, I want to talk about something that I noticed recently that I think has some bigger implications. A couple of weeks ago, thanks to that good old internet machine, there was a clip on there that got worldwide attention. Former Beatle, which is a designation which has followed Paul McCartney around since 1970, when the band officially broke up and Paul officially announced that he was leaving and thus breaking the Beatles up, which turned out to be for good. One of the few things that never had a reunion. And I think, sadly, if John Lennon had not been killed in 1980, I think eventually the Beatles would have gotten back together sometime. Of course, George Harrison died at age 57 in, I believe, 2001. But sometime between 1970 and, let's say, 2001, when George Harrison died of natural causes, he had cancer, I believe the Beatles would have gotten back together in some form. I think they would have recorded and toured. I really do, somewhere down the line. Maybe not regularly, but it wouldn't have been the end as it was in April of 1970. But former Beatle is not a bad title when you think about it to have, even though it's been a burden for many of the individual Beatles, at least in their minds, for some time. I think the surviving Beatles, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, have come to embrace the term former Beatle and embrace the amazing body of work that they created as a unit and embrace the impact that they had on the culture and embrace ultimately all that is included and encompassed by the term Beatles or Beatlemania. I think at this age and at this time in their lives, Paul being 77, Ringo just having turned 79, I think they have come to embrace and celebrate and be proud of their work as the Beatles and being members of the Beatles, even though for a while there, throughout their lives and careers, they tried to distance themselves from the Beatles and try to go out, you know, to be entities among, you know, of themselves. Paul McCartney is a member of Wings and is a solo artist. Certainly Ringo as a solo artist. John as a solo artist, although he had a band, a quasi-band called the Plastic Ono Band. And obviously Ringo has had a very successful solo career and is, for the last 30 years, celebrating it this year, in fact, his All-Star Band tour, which he tours with and has toured over the years, the last three decades, with a number of very accomplished and well-known and successful musicians as well. And he's played his hits as well as his Beatle hits. So the four members of the Beatles, certainly, and don't forget George Harrison, was not only one of the more successful solo artists, but then he went on to form the Traveling Wilburys, which I believe is still one of the great supergroups of all time in rock history, with Tom Petty and Bob Dylan and Roy Orbison and Jeff Lynne of ELO, in addition to George Harrison. So all four Beatles certainly accomplished quite a bit on their own, as well as the amazing part of their careers when they were working together as a unit as the Beatles. So former Beatle is not a bad designation to have before your name as an introduction. In fact, I would argue it's probably one of the top three in history, right? Former Beatle is a great way to be introduced. Former president isn't a bad way to be introduced or remembered. And probably former king or former queen or current queen or current king. Those aren't bad either. But I think Beatle is right up there with president and king. And I'm glad to see that Paul and Ringo, the surviving members of the Beatles, have embraced that. And that's what I want to talk about. So Paul McCartney did a concert a few weeks ago in Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium. And toward the end of the show, he shocked everyone and delighted everyone by bringing out his old mate, this is Ringo, you know. He's one of me mates from the Beatles, you know. And here he is. Hello, Paul. Peace and love. So Ringo came out. They sang a couple of songs together. And those lucky 20,000 or so people got a chance to see the two surviving Beatles. And they seemed to have a great time. The crowd went wild. And as I watched this, I saw two people that, as I said, have genuine love and affection for us, have been friends for them, personally have been friends for over 55, 60 years probably, have, you know, contributed to this iconic and major cultural and musical influence, achieved, you know, success and popularity beyond all successes, as well as respect. And not too many bands can say that, to be popular and respected. That's a tough duo to get. Some people are popular, but they're not respected. Some people are respected, but they never become popular. But the Beatles have both. They truly are icons, in a word that gets spread around a little too much these days. And the Beatles music will be known and listened to and admired and revered in centuries to come, just as we do with music by Mozart and Beethoven and Puccini and Verdi and Bernstein and Gershwin. The Beatles music will, and already is, I believe, in that immortal category. And so, wow, what a night and what a lucky treat for those people that were there. And all I could think of when I saw the fun that they were having on stage together, as well as the hysteria of the fans who got a chance to see it in person, all I kept saying to myself was, wouldn't it be great if more people could experience and enjoy and celebrate that. Which brings me to say, Paul and Ringo, you're 77 and 79 respectively. Paul is 77, Ringo just turned 79. You're in good shape, you look great, no question. But you're almost 80, and as we know, anything can happen. Sadly to say, time is running out, and we've already lost two former members of the group at such young ages. It's such a shame. John Lennon in 1980 being assassinated, and as I said, George Harrison at age 57, so young, dying of cancer. So we have two Beatles left. Two Beatles that like each other, that still get along, that the fans are clamoring to see. Their music has taken on a heightened sense of popularity over the last 15 to 20 years. It might be hard to remember or believe, depending on how old you are, but in the 80s and even in the early 90s, the Beatles were not that popular. Beatles music had sort of faded away. And then in the late 90s, early 2000s, they wisely put together a CD of their number one hits, and it became a number one smash around the world all over again, and it reintroduced the Beatles to an entirely new generation. It's odd to think that people wouldn't know the Beatles, but there was a group of people that really had not been exposed to Beatle music because it wasn't being played, and it wasn't being talked about, and it wasn't being celebrated in the mainstream as much as you would have thought. But the Beatles wisely remarketed themselves. You wouldn't think they would need to, but with every new generation, yes, you do have to reintroduce. And younger generations have become just as passionate and just as hysterical and just as respectful of that Beatle music as those who were there when it was first introduced to the world in the early to mid-60s. So the Beatles have now certainly cemented their place in history. And they're, you know, don't forget, the Beatles didn't tour after 1966. They broke up in April of 1969, but they hadn't toured since 1966. So there are probably more people on this earth right now who have never seen the Beatles perform in any incarnation, whether it's all four or even two that remain today, than did see them 50 years ago, almost 60 years ago, but more than, you know, 50 years ago. So I'm watching them up there on this video there, you know, on the internet, and saying, wouldn't it be great if Paul and Ringo did one more tour? They're still touring individually, selling out places across the country and around the world. But when they are on the stage together, there is a certain magic and a certain history that happens just by them standing there. And the fact that they're still performing and performing well is a bonus. So let's take advantage of it. Let's give the people that one more chance. That with time running out here, in reality, don't want to be a Debbie Downer, right? But they're both in their late 70s. You never know what can happen. But while they're both in good health, while they're both performing well, wouldn't it be great if they did a co-headlining tour? Paul and Ringo, not just some one-off, you know, spur-of-the-moment thing or something for some lucky-by-chance crowd that gets to see them together because one happens to be in the same town as the other at one time or the other, but a full-blown two-and-a-half-hour show, three-hour show, whatever you have, and it's Paul and Ringo on stage playing the Beatles music as well as their individual songs. Needless to say, it would be the concert of a lifetime, concert of the century. And the century is not even 20 years old yet, and it would still be the concert tour of the century. And I've got a name for it. I'm even doing the work for you guys. Paul and Ringo come together. There it is. It's perfect, right? what a great thing it would be to see them together, to celebrate their music. It would be both nostalgic as well as historic, as well as urgent and in the moment. It wouldn't just be some two old guys standing there, because they're still performing at a very high level. In fact, I would argue that not only are they performing at a high level, but most of the classic rockers of today who are still out on the road, and we are lucky that they still are. And if you haven't seen some of them yet, you should, because time is running out. Tom Petty's unfortunate death a couple of years ago at just age 66 proves how fragile life can be. But meanwhile, the Rolling Stones are out on the road right now. The Who are on the road right now. Paul and Ringo individually are on the road right now. Elton John is on the road right now. Billy Joel is on the road right now. Rod Stewart is out on the road. James Taylor is out on the road. Barbra Streisand is out on the road. Some of these major, Fleetwood Mac is out on the road. The Kinks, one of the great unsung heroes of the British invasion, and one of the true innovators who should have been much more popular in the United States than they were. They're all day and all night with that classic riff. I mean, that's one of the great rock and roll riffs of all time. Some say that riff actually was the forerunner to heavy metal. The Kinks are even getting back together, and they've been squabbling. The two Davies brothers, Ray and Dave, have been squabbling for years, but they may get together and tour. All these folks are in their 70s. How much time do they have left? If you haven't seen them ever, get out there and see them if you've wanted to. Don't wait. There may not be another tour. If you've seen them before but you want to see them one more time, don't wait. This was a special time in music. It was almost a renaissance. And these people are getting older. And that's why I'm glad that they're performing. And, you know, when you go see some of these bands like the Stones or the Who or Paul or Ringo, I would argue that you're seeing a better show in terms of pure musical performance today than you did 30 or 40 years ago when they were in their prime. Granted, there was a youthful energy and exuberance from them as well as the crowd. Everybody was way into rock and roll as a youthful rebellion. So there was energy and adrenaline and rebellion going on, which all fueled and played important roles in the power of rock and roll, in the music as well as its influence. So you can't completely replicate that. But I would argue that in terms of pure performance and pure musicianship, the fact is that most of these classic rockers now in their 70s are much healthier physically. They're sober. Back in the 60s and 70s, they were either drugged out or drunk on stage, and they got by because of that youthful energy and that youthful exuberance. But now I would argue that they are playing their instruments and singing better, and performing overall better than they ever did, because they're clean and sober and healthy and focused and want to leave a great image of them and their performance and their band for posterity. Having seen so many Elton John shows in the last several years, I could tell you, Elton John's piano playing and performance as a musician far exceeds some of the stuff that he did in his heyday when he was just out of his mind and going control and writing on adrenaline, and in the 80s, writing on cocaine and alcohol. When I see him play the piano today, it's amazing. So if you haven't seen Bruce Springsteen, if you haven't seen the Stones, if you haven't seen the Who, or if you haven't seen him in a while, you know, Springsteen may be touring in 2020. Now is the time. Springsteen turned 70 this year. Now is the time. And speaking of now is the time for Paul and Ringo to put aside whatever weirdness they have about the Beatles and come together on a full-blown tour. They can charge $500 and give all the money to charity. It could be a great thing. And they don't need to do 30 shows. They could do 10 or 15 shows. One in every major city around the world. Wouldn't that be cool? Do three here in the United States. Do one in L.A., one in Chicago, one in New York. Do one in London. Do one in Paris. Do one in Rome. Do one in Japan. Do one in Russia. Do one in Brazil, in South America. Do one in Australia. And then, of course, end it up, and I'm doing the work for you again, guys, the final show of the Paul and Ringo Come Together tour is, of course, where else? In Liverpool. How great would that be? How great would that be for them? I think personally they would get a kick out of it. And how great would it be for their fans and for music and for history and for posterity? They're singing and performing great. They still have it. So once those voices leave, as good as some of these tribute bands might be, there's only one Paul McCartney voice when he sings those Beatles songs. And no, it isn't a Beatles reunion. It's not hyped as a Beatles reunion per se. That name isn't there if they're still sensitive about that. It's Paul and Ringo come together. But yes, they certainly play the Beatles music. Once John Lennon was killed in 1980, there could never be a true Beatles reunion. And that's the truth. Even though they did record a song with the three remaining members in the mid-90s using a John Lennon demo and his voice, Free as a Bird and Real Love, but that's really, you know, a studio creation because John wasn't there. So it's not a Beatles reunion, but at the same time, it's a celebration of the amazing contributions that the Beatles made to pop music and to this culture. And they really did change music, and they really did change the culture. And that should be celebrated and recognized, and they're still around, and why not do it? So to you out there, if you haven't seen one of your favorite classic rock bands, get out there and see them while they're out there, because you may not have a chance in a couple of years. Let's be honest. In the next 5 to 10 years, many of these people may either not be able to perform anymore because of their age, or in the next 5 or 10 years, sad enough to say, many of them may not be around anymore. But they're around today. They're on tour, and they are performing better than ever. So I say to you, if they're out there and they come to your town, don't procrastinate. See them while you can. This is a time in history. It's almost like a Renaissance time. See them while you can. And to Paul and Ringo, this is your time to do it. This is the time right now. Sit down, plot it out, get it together. Paul and Ringo, come together. Do it for yourselves, do it for history, and do it for your fans. Come on, guys. Just let it be. And now we take a stroll over to the Pop Culture Club with regular contributor, Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
And today we are going to go to the Pop Culture Club and really talk about one of the pillars of pop culture, which is anything to do with awards in the entertainment world is big news. And we are going to talk about one of the big ones, of course, that will be coming up in September. Nominations just came out about a week or so ago. The Emmy Awards.
Yeah, it's that time.
And it's very fitting because your nickname is Emmy.
That's right. It is.
So how perfect is that? Mine, of course, is Grammy. Even though I am not a grandparent.
No.
Just think. If we do this long enough, your nickname could be Grammy.
Grammy Emmy.
Grammy Emmy. You could do both.
Yeah.
And my nickname for many years has been Oscar. So it works perfect. Although my confirmation name is Tony.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Anthony, after...
So we could have the whole EGOT.
Yeah, yeah, we could have... We are EGOT right here. Emmy and... Well, we have Emmy and Anthony, and you could be a Grammy, so all we would need is an Oscar.
Right.
So maybe one of your kids will name their kid Oscar.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe James will have an Oscar Armanetti.
Yeah, you don't see many Oscars anymore.
Yeah, my confirmation name is Anthony after Tony Esposito, the goalie on the Blackhawks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I can't imagine. I don't know. You don't know. Names are getting interesting, but they're getting so interesting. Like recently, someone was talking about, like, I don't know, it was like a kid at school or something, and they were like, oh, yeah, and then we have this new kid in our class, Mark, and like a bunch of moms and I all looked at each other like, what?
Mark?
You have a kid in your class named Mark? And they were like, yeah, because you just don't hear like traditional names much anymore. It was like, wow, I can't believe there's a kid named Mark.
Yeah, in fact, I remember my mom, I think my dad saying that they were thinking of naming me Mark.
Oh, yeah. Mark Toronto.
Mark
yeah,
Toronto.
I think Jim was the... Well, as you know, James is like
well,
my
yeah.
favorite.
Well, that's
name,
why you named your son.
Boy, so.
That's why you named your son after me.
Exactly.
I know
yeah.
that. Mm-hmm. I know that. It's not a secret.
Right.
I understand the tribute. No, in fact, because again, my dad's name was James and his father. Although my grandfather's name was James apparently when he came here. But his real name, when I've, you know, his name in Italy before he came to the United States, I don't know if it was changed by some guy at Ellis Island or whatever, but his name was actually like Vincenzo or something.
Oh, I like that.
And I was told that somehow in some circles that Vincenzo, instead of, you would think it's Vincent,
mm-hmm.
you know, the American version.
Yeah.
But they were saying that, no, in Italy, Vincenzo means James, and that's why he became.
What?
Yeah. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
I can't believe that's true. That was what I was told. Because I said, well, why? Wait a minute. If his name was Vincenzo or something like that, then why was he named James when he came here? And they said, well, that's, you know.
The Americanized.
And I'm like, well, wouldn't it be Vincent? You know, I'm like, well, wouldn't that be Vincent? And they just looked at me and like, shut up, kid.
Well, you think about this. You could have been a Vinny.
Vinny. Oh, that would have been, hey, Vinny Toronto, nice.
That would have been a great name.
Oh, God. Hi, Vinny Toronto with you. How you doing over there? But, yeah, so, in fact, my dad's, like, middle name is some Italian name. Diogino or something.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because.
I like it.
Yeah, it's like James Diogino. He always went by James D. You know, he put the D in there. But I was like, so what's your middle name? He's like, oh, you know, it's Digino or something, you know.
I love that, though. No, in our family, like, all the men are named Leonard or Edward
right.
or
Leonard.
Gaetano.
Oh, you have a Gaetano. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Yeah, guys. Well, yeah, then they're Guy for short,
right.
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Tawny is another nickname. I think my dad, he had like an uncle and a cousin and like another distant cousin all named Gaetano, and only one of them went by Tawny.
Oh, Tawny. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, Tawny.
Oh, instead of Guy, they went with Tawny.
They all like, they all had like, well, they all had those, that was the name pool.
You know, we have very few boys in my family. On the Toronto side, mostly my dad had five sisters. The sisters did not have a lot of kids, and most of the kids were girls. In fact, I'm the only Toronto male that would, and I haven't and won't, you know, carry on the name.
Hmm.
Yeah, my branch of the family will die with me.
Right. Oh, man.
Yeah, because I didn't have any kids, and I'm the only boy. The rest were all girls. And for a while, when you were at a family function of ours, if you said Jim, everybody turned around.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, there was my dad, who was Chief. That was his nickname. But I was Jim Jim, and then there was Little Jimmy, and then there was Jimmy. So you said Jimmy, and everybody turned around.
Right.
In fact, I talked to my dad, you know, when he was older, and I said, how did you ever get the name Chief? Because that was just, everybody knew him as Chief, not as Jim at all. And he said, oh, you know, someone in the neighborhood, somebody in the neighborhood gave me that name because, you know, I had five sisters, so I was like the chief of their tribe, you know. And he said, but I hated that name.
Oh, I think that's a cool nickname.
Yeah, so do I. But he said he didn't like it, but he said, but you had no choice.
Right.
You know, that was your nickname. And I'm like, my gosh, you were known by that name pretty much your whole life. My mom called him Chief. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And yet he didn't like it, which was so funny. In fact, that's how I knew that people from work, if someone called from him from work, I knew it was a work person because they asked his Jimmo.
Oh, right.
So he went by Jim at work. He would not tell people that he was Chief. If I would have said Chief, they wouldn't have known who I was talking about. If I talked to somebody from his work, he didn't tell anybody that was his nickname.
Yeah, well, I don't blame him if he didn't like it.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, Emmy, how do we get...
Because we're going to drift away.
Last podcast, we started and drifted, but we're doing it this time. We're talking about the Emmy Awards.
Let's get focused.
Right. So...
we have to focus.
The Emmy Awards are in September, and not surprisingly, unlike last year when Game of Thrones was not eligible because it was not on the air... for last year's Emmys, it certainly was eligible this year to the tune of 32 Emmy nominations, which broke the record for any show in the history of television.
Wow. Now, I have a question about this. So, what Game of Thrones season, though, is this that, like, is it...
The final season.
Did they break up the last season into two different...
They just had last season was season 8, and they did 6 episodes as opposed to 10.
So you're telling me that this batch of Emmy nominations that they've gotten now is just for those last 6 episodes that everybody complained about and hated?
Everyone complained, and all the episodes they complained about all got nominated.
I mean,
yeah, this was just a complete love fest for Game of Thrones, which
interesting.
and many of the the categories, there are actors or directors or writers, because all the episodes have different writers and different directors.
Right.
They're all competing against one another. So, you know, there's good chance that with all these nominations, it might not win a lot of Emmys because they may either, you know, cancel each other out, or nobody may win in that category. And they're, you know, they dominate.
Well, based on everything I've heard about the last season, it seems like maybe they shouldn't win any. All the diehard fans, everyone who said for years and years, oh, Game of Thrones, you have to watch it. All basically were like, yeah, don't bother. Because
I think the diehards went a little crazy too in their criticism. So I think that, you know, if you were not so invested in the lifeblood, that it was your lifeblood, that you were able to look at it with a little more of an objective view, and you could see, you know, some of the actual, excellence or quality, as opposed to the disappointment that they may have had with the way a certain character ended up or a path that they took that they didn't expect. You know what I mean? If you're looking at the writing of a show, or if you're looking at the costume design, or if you're looking at the direction or the lighting or whatever from a technical standpoint, then it doesn't really matter if, you know, the Queen of Dragons killed someone or didn't. You know what I mean? So that's where...
Yeah.
That's where a lot of the criticism came, was just that a lot of people's favorite characters did not go the path that many thought they would or should. At the same time, many of those famous favorite characters still all got nominated.
Right.
You know, whether it's Peter Dinklage or Emily Clark or Kit, is it Harrington or Harrington? Yeah, Kit Harrington.
Yeah, Kit Harrington. Yeah.
You know, so they all got nominated. So it will be interesting to see. But I think, once again, the biggest story out of this year's Emmy Awards is the complete diversity and I think dilution of, I mean, some of these shows I've never even heard of that are nominated.
Like which ones, for example?
Like in the comedy category, best comedy, what is Fleabag?
Oh, Fleabag. Yeah. So
Fleabag.
So I've been hearing buzz about Fleabag for a while, but when I saw the Emmy nominations, I think one of my takeaways was I really have to start watching that. So that is, I think it's a Netflix original show. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is...
Is that one name
British,
or seven?
British, like... you
Wait,
know,
is that
like
three names or one name?
It is... Phoebe? It's a hyphenated.
Oh, so
like,
she's Weller.
It's like biopic. It's a hyphenated.
Oh, so it's not Weller Bridge. It's Weller hyphen Bridge.
Yeah.
Oh.
Waller hyphen Bridge.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. And okay, so this is a comedy. I haven't started watching it yet. I did watch the first few minutes of the first episode because I was like, you know, it's like officially being hyped now that it's gotten.
Right.
Some Emmy nominations. And really, honestly, the first 10 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, I could see myself getting into this.
Oh,
so,
really? Okay.
Yeah.
And what is it about?
I think it's just about like a single, you know, single woman living somewhere. I'm assuming she's in London. What? It's funny. Oh, just because it's a woman?
Woman mm-hmm. trying to get through life and relationships and love.
Yes, but it's funny. But you know what? Do you know? But Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
you just want to keep saying that name.
I do. She also created the series Killing Eve, which has been nominated.
Right, mm-hmm. With Sandra Oh.
Yeah, with Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer, and this is one of my favorite shows right now.
And that was nominated as well, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And Jodie Comer, who plays kind of the, you know, so she and Sandra Oh are both sort of the lead characters. They're like the protagonist on the show.
Yeah, now that show
She's
was
the
nominated.
Villain. She's the villain. So Jodie Comer is so outstanding in this role, and I have not been able to get my head around why Sandra Oh has been getting all the awards and all the kudos. This is the first time that Jodie Comer has been nominated for an Emmy for this role, and she is just phenomenal in it.
Well, that show got nominated. A lot of buzz on that. That got nominated for best drama. And yeah. Another weird thing about this, there's a lot of, I mean, this Emmys really does reflect and almost really, you know, really, you know, seals what's been happening over the last several years is how the entire landscape of television has changed, how viewing habits have changed, how the growth of the different platforms, the streaming and cable, as well as network. It's so Dodge City. There's just no rules anymore. And the Emmys kind of reflect that in their nominations, in that some categories like Best Drama have 8 nominees.
Yeah.
And yet Best Comedy has like 6 or 5. Some categories for Best Actor or Actress or Supporting Actress, like Supporting Actress has 9 nominations.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't understand that either. I was like, "Wait, I don't. What's going on here?"
Well, once again, I think we're seeing the result of the culture of everybody gets a trophy. We can't. Well, no, it's not a joke. We cannot, just have 5 nominees because then there's 4. Like for instance, in that case, there'd be 4 people that people would be screaming about. Well, how did this person not get nominated? She's so good or he's so good. Everybody deserves a trophy. So I think, sadly...
Yeah, but that doesn't explain, though, why some categories do actually only have 5 nominees and then others have, like, 8.
Well, I'm sorry, but there just should be 5. And that's it.
I am in agreement with you, for sure.
To break these rules are getting ridiculous. Because to me, it's just diluting everything. And it's like, you know... One of the, if you remember, the Oscars last year, or this year, but, you know, we're supposed to have that added category for the blockbuster film.
Oh, gosh.
Remember? And then they sent that trial balloon up, and they decided not to do it because it just was it had no merit. And one of the arguments for it was, well, in the current way the current rules are, you know, Dwayne the Rock will never win an Oscar. And right. My answer to that is, good.
Right.
He's not supposed to. Just because he's in a movie that makes $1 trillion, he should not be said in the same breath as Dustin Hoffman or Marlon Brando or George Clooney. So that's why you have a short list, because only the best, Dwayne the Rock, whatever his last name is, I can't even remember, should not ever get close to winning an Oscar. But in today's world, well, that's not fair. The Rock can't win an Academy Award. Well, yeah, good. That's called competition.
Well, right, but then people reacted so, like, harshly to that new category that they got rid of it.
So, I mean, I'm actually looking at these Emmys now.
You're not alone in your opinions. You know,
no, but I'm just, I understand. But I'm just saying, so I look at these with a little grain of salt because I'm saying, you know, some of these categories are just a little inflated. We have to just, it's always been five, and that's what it takes. And if another show doesn't make it, well, then that's the way life is. But as I said, the drama series, there's eight of these, and as it has been for the last at least two or three years, out of the now eight nominees in the drama category.
Yeah. See, now here's what I think.
And only one is from a network.
You're looking at drama series.
Yeah, there's only one from a network, which is This Is Us on NBC. All the rest are on cable or streaming stations. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that just goes to show you how people are not watching networks. And the networks, aside from reality shows and retreaded game shows and, you know, sporting events, I don't know what people are really going to the networks for.
Well, I have to tell you this, actually, because now that I'm looking at the drama series, I mean, I don't even know what Bodyguard is, but I mean, right. I've just mentioned how much I really like Killing Eve, and that is a show that originally I think was on, it's a BBC show, and Actually, I have to correct myself, Fleabag is a BBC show too, but I think when I was watching it on Amazon Prime,
right.
And Killing Eve airs on BBC there, and it aired here on BBC America. But I think it also, A&E ran it, because when I started watching it, I believe I was watching it on A&E on-demand stuff. Then you have Ozark, which is Netflix, and that is fantastic. Have you watched that
yet? Oh, I love that. Yeah, I was a huge fan of that. We watched both seasons of that, yeah.
I'm still in the middle of the first season, because I just started
Jesus!
Watching it.
Jesus! Would you come on?
Hey, I don't, listen, I have other things to do, but, and Succession, have you watched Succession?
Love Succession, huge fan of Succession.
Love it, I'm so happy it's finally getting some recognition.
And it comes back for a new season in August.
Succession is cable, is it HBO or Showtime?
HBO.
I can't remember.
HBO.
Okay, yeah.
That comes back August 11th.
Yeah, no, I know. I just recently realized that. I'm looking forward to it.
So you'll get to be behind on that.
I am not behind on that. I'm totally up to date.
But you will be. You're not going to watch that week by week.
No, but so in looking at this, I watch it, yeah, in my own time. No, I will. Actually, Succession is a show that I will watch in real time.
Oh, really?
That I'm caught up.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Good.
Because right. I think it comes on Sunday nights too, which I think always helps. Because Sunday nights are like when you're not really doing anything.
Yeah, Bodyguard is a was a British show.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So the only network show on here you're saying is This Is Us,
right?
Yeah. And I don't think it really has a chance up against.
No, not this year, not at all. Especially with Game of Thrones back in in the hunt, and Stranger Things is there, and you know.
Yeah, well, now isn't Pose, that is probably on FX, right? Is that a network?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not one of the major networks.
No, it's FX, but that's not a network. I mean, I'm talking about ABC, CBS.
Right, okay.
And NBC. I'm talking about the three major, or Fox. I mean, that's all I'm talking about.
Okay.
What I think is interesting in the comedy category, and once again, it shows to the great power of Netflix. So there's been this show for several years called Schitt's Creek.
Mm-hmm. My parents are huge fans of that show. They talk about it all the time.
Yeah, now I've seen a few episodes. I was watching it for the first two or three seasons because I love Eugene Levy from SCTV and Chris Elliott from Letterman Show and SNL and his own show, Get a Life, in the 90s. And,
oh, God, I used to love that show.
Oh, yeah, great show.
So funny.
And and then Catherine O'Hara, also from SCTV, and both they were both married in the great film Best in Show. You know, they were
American. Oh, yeah, she did all the Christopher Guest films. Although, I have to say, one of my favorite Catherine O'Hara performances of all time has to be in Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Remember, she plays the haughty wife in Beetlejuice.
Yeah, which is kind of the role that she plays here. And so what's interesting about Schitt's Creek, it's an interesting, fish out of water scenario. A well-to-do, rich, entitled family, wife and husband, and two 20-something, 30-something kids who are very spoiled, as I said, very entitled, very isolated, very snobby, all of them are. And they hit hard times, somehow their fortune, I can't remember what the premise was, but they lose their fortune. And they have to go live in this very small rural town, which is called Schitt's Creek.
Uh-huh.
On a takeoff on the line, you're up Schitt's Creek. And so they have to, they're fish out of water. They have to now deal with living like everyone else, like the rabble that they used to look down on or not even, recognize or even realize were around. So that's the premise, and it's a nice premise. And it was funny, in my view, for two or three years, and then after that, it seemed to me that they were starting to, start to get a little repetitive, and it was getting a little off the wall, and so I stopped watching it.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is that show was on a very small, cable network, not even well known, called Pop TV.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which used to be the TV Guide channel. And, when the show would come out every year, it would get, they would do, print ads and the stars would go on TV shows to promote it. But obviously, clearly, it was not seen by a lot of people. And it was just kind of languishing. And probably was going to get canceled. However, it just goes to show you the power of streaming and the power of Netflix. The first three or four seasons suddenly popped up on Netflix. People discovered the show on Netflix from the first season on and started watching it to the point that it became this hugely popular show to the point now that it got an Emmy nomination for this last season for Best Comedy. Here's a show that probably was going to get canceled or at the very least was going to just fade into oblivion. But
right.
Thanks to Netflix, and what I think is kind of ironic, as I said, I stopped watching it the last two or three years. I'm wondering if the popularity of the show is based more on the first two or three seasons that I watched, that people got to like it because they saw the beginnings of the show on Netflix, than the actual series that has been on the last season. I wonder if people are still enjoying the new seasons, or are they still enamored with the first two or three that they watched on Netflix? But one way or the other, this show has suddenly, jumped right into major recognition and prominence and an Emmy Award nomination. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, well, good for them, too. It's a good, I like that cast. Yeah, I have seen some of the episodes. I think it is very funny. But it's one of those shows where it's like, I feel like I could always, if I had 30 minutes to sit down and watch something, I could always just put it on.
Yeah, that's
like
going to be an interesting category because, you've got the final season of Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Barry, which is one of my favorite shows, a great show on HBO with Bill Hader. But then everybody's favorite is The Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Well, The Marvelous Miss Maisel, I feel, won a lot of awards like last year, right?
For the last two years.
But I don't know. I mean, it's nice to see like The Good Place finally getting a nomination in this category because that is a really good show. That's Kristen Bell and Ted Danson.
Right, yeah.
It's a really clever very funny show. And I feel like that traditionally maybe doesn't get enough recognition. And this is the first time I believe it's been nominated.
Right. Yeah.
As a series.
Right. Yeah.
You know, this Russian Doll show, I tried to watch the first episode of that. I could not even get through the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. There was a lot of buzz about that, but at the same time, I wasn't even excited by the premise.
No, it was dull. Well, I mean, the thing is, I couldn't even get to, I think the premise of it is that this is about a woman who dies on her birthday, but, like, she keeps living the same day over and over again.
Yeah, it's kind of like Groundhog Day.
Which is interesting to me, but I couldn't even get to her death in the first episode because it was dragging from the get-go. And also, Natasha Lyonne, who's the lead character in the show, who I do like as an actress, her character's accent, which is like just a very New York accent, just annoys me so much. And, you know, I lived in Brooklyn for 4 years.
Right.
So I don't care, but there's something about this that I just couldn't listen to anymore. And so I'm surprised to see that getting so much recognition.
Well, like I said,
I have to think, though, that the Marvelous Miss Maisel's biggest competition is, I mean, I know you, that sounds like you think that that's kind of probably
the favorite.
This is Veep's last season. So I wonder,
like I said, if they're going to give Veep, because it was a pretty good season. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus now is like the Lucy of this generation.
Well, and I think, isn't she, if she wins in the lead actress category, going to, like, set a record?
That's what I mean.
The record.
Yeah. I mean, she's like Lucy. I mean, it's unbelievable. So it will be interesting to see. I mean, but that's the one thing that like I said, and I've said this before when I got into the world of streaming a couple of years ago, is there's just, at this point now, there is, you know, the whole television viewing experience. While there are a lot of really good shows, there's also a lot of crap because there's a lot of time to fill, and a lot of streaming services just need content. So there's a lot of crap to filter through.
But you say that, but there's a lot of good shows that Netflix lately, there's been a lot of coverage about the shows that they have pulled the plug on,
right,
that fans are really upset because they have, like, a really loyal fan base. And one example of that is the Drew Barrymore show, Santa Clarita Diet, which I was a huge fan of. It's Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant, and they play a married couple. And this show is hilarious. It's really, and it's kind of a nice, it's an easy show to watch, you know. It was a Netflix original, and they canceled it. Now, so that's the thing. They're not really hurting for content because now they're starting to dump a lot of content.
Well, that's my point, though, is that there's so much stuff out there that it's hard to find stuff. It's hard to know what is out there or what is good, what isn't good. And then there's some things that get a real big buzz. Like I said, this Schitt's Creek thing. I mean, Bill Hader was quoted as saying he was more excited that Schitt's Creek got nominated than he was for his own show.
Oh.
Yeah. So my point is that a show, some for whatever reason, you know, gets some buzz, gets some initial, you know, hype. That people start, you know, there's word of mouth, there's social media, and just takes off, like Maisel or like the Schitt's Creek, but there's other shows like the one that you're talking about that I did read some stuff initially and it got good reviews, but for some reason it didn't grab people's imagination or never got the real buzz. And so that's my point, is when you start to look at some of these nominees, there's a lot of times where these are the best shows, supposedly, on television, and it's amazing for someone who watches as much television as I do and you do that we still go, oh, I never heard of that show.
Right.
Or I've never watched it. And that is so different from even 10 years ago, where even if you didn't like a show that was nominated, you certainly heard about it. You knew that it existed. The landscape, as I said earlier, it's so huge. It's so expansive. And it's so fractured in what people watch, and there's so many niche kind of shows that there's some shows that, for whatever reason, get some buzz and they get some support, and they get elevated into a best show category, and yet it's a show that many people may never even heard of. You know, I mean, I'm sure that people have, there's a lot of people that have never heard of Pose, which is a Ryan Murphy show. It's about drag queens. But I'm sure that a lot of people have never even heard that show existed, and here it is in the top eight, you know. Or a show like Succession, you know, which I haven't heard a lot of buzz about. I like the premise, and so I watched it from day one. I like the actor Brian Cox. That was initially what drove me to watch it, but the other characters are just as compelling now as I continue to watch it. What's his name's brother is in it?
Macaulay Culkin's brother. He's my favorite character on that show. I love his character. What's his name? Roman.
Yeah, Roman.
I love that character, but I also think that this is a great performance by. Kieran Culkin.
Kieran Culkin. It's just kind of a show. It's a takeoff kind of on the Rupert Murdoch, kind of big media baron with a bunch of kids that are all, fighting in between for control of the empire and the old man. It's a kind of a Sumner Redstone and a Rupert Murdoch kind of amalgamation. Now, what's interesting is we may have an EGOT winner this year.
Oh, really?
We talked about EGOT earlier, which is a slang for a performer that gets the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony, the major performing awards that we give out every year for television and theater and movies and music. And so I'm very proud to say, since I've been a fan since I was 11 years old, Bruce Springsteen got two nominations for his Springsteen on Broadway show that was on Netflix, which was a special based on his live theater show, Springsteen on Broadway. So it got two nominations. So odds are, I don't know if he's going to win. He's in Variety special, and he's up against some, pretty good competition. So it'll be very interesting to see if he gets it. But if he does get the Emmy, he does complete his EGOT.
Wow. And, okay. What does he have an Oscar for?
For Streets of Philadelphia. So he's got the Oscar for Streets of Philadelphia. He got a Tony, a special Tony this year for Springsteen on Broadway. He's obviously won multiple Grammys, and now he's nominated for an Emmy. My other favorite, of course, Elton John, is in a similar situation, and he also needs an Emmy. He's got everything but the E. He's got the got. Right. He's got the got.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the E, and so I don't know how we can get him an E, but hopefully we'll find a way to get him an E one of these times.
Yeah.
So he can become an EGOT. So that'll be interesting to see that. But it's going to
Trust me. I'm sure he's already brainstormed ways that he can get the E. He's probably got a team of people working.
I hope he does. That. I mean, he deserves an EGOT. Aren't that many EGOT people. There are a few. I think John Legend already has an EGOT.
John Legend just got one.
And Barbara Streisand.
Which award clinched it for him.
Yeah, Barbara Streisand has
Whoopi Goldberg's
got
an EGOT.
I don't know. Is Jamie Foxx have an EGOT? I don't know if he's.
That's a good question.
He might not have a Tony. He's got an Oscar. I'm sure he's got a Grammy, and I'm sure he's got an Emmy. There are a few people that throughout. I know Rita Moreno might be a name that some people may know, but she's.
You know what? There are not. This is a very short list. Only 15 people.
Yeah.
So Andrew Lloyd Webber, I'm just looking at the most recent ones. John Legend, Whoopi Goldberg, Mike Nichols, Mel Brooks, Audrey Hepburn. Who is Tim Rice? Should I know who this person is?
Oh yeah, well Tim Rice actually is a lyricist, and Tim Rice wrote with Andrew Lloyd Webber. Jesus Christ Superstar. And Joseph, and he also wrote the lyrics for Lion King with Elton.
Okay, because he's one of the most recent.
Yeah, he won the Oscar for Lion King with Elton for Can You Feel the Love Tonight, and he obviously won the Tony Award, I would assume, for Jesus Christ Superstar or some of the other, him and Andrew Lloyd Webber were early writing partners, and so I'm wondering what he won the Emmy for, though. That's interesting. Yeah, but so that's a very select group. But Bruce Springsteen this year could enter that, so we will see about that. So it'll be very interesting to watch. As I said, it's hard to tell the winners without a score, or even the nominees without a scorecard. Now it's getting harder every year as streaming services become more popular and people just gravitate toward shows that some people watch and some have never heard about. So it should be interesting. If you had a big one headline from this year's Emmys, what do you think the headline will be?
Oh my gosh, that's a tough one. The headline, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Game of Thrones bombs at the Emmys.
I'm going to say
that. Yeah, because I just think this is an interesting one to watch because they do tend to, for sentimental reasons, award people when it's like their final season, whatever. But I think given that so many people felt that plot lines were dropped and a lot of stuff that was sort of out of character, and I don't even watch this show,
right?
So I don't even know, but I know that these are some of the criticisms that people had of the last season, and so I guess that's going to be my big headline prediction.
Well, I am going to also
shut out for Game. Now, and I have to say, though, let me preface this by saying that I'm not going to include the acting categories in that because I believe that even if the whole show went downhill in the last season, I have no doubt that the actors were still acting to the same quality that they always had been, in the past. Right. So that's my one.
Well, that's an interesting one. I'm that's a good one. Instead of saying that it's going to dominate, to say that it might come up very short out of the 32 nominations.
Yeah, I think that's
I'm going to go out on a limb, even though we talked about this earlier about some shows like Veep in their final season and Julia Louis-Dreyfus and the show Barry with Bill Hader is a popular one, and Miss Maisel has dominated the award seasons. I am going to make a prediction that this crazy, out-of-the-blue cult show is going to have enough buzz. Schitt's Creek is going to win Best Comedy.
Wow.
I think the fact that it got nominated tells me that there is a momentum behind that show that I think people are just going to either jump on the bandwagon or they are already on the bandwagon out in Hollywood, at least within the industry, that show, for it to have even gotten nominated, was a tremendous achievement. And so I think that train is going into the station with an Emmy Award. So that's going to be my headline. Okay. Little known Schitt's Creek wins Best Comedy.
Okay, well.
So, yeah, we'll have this now as a record, and come September we will see how Game of Thrones does with its 32 nominations, and we'll see if Little Schitt's Creek is the Schitt's Creek that could.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I want to thank you once again, Emily, for taking the time and adding your always insightful and interesting opinions and information, and we will say until next time.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim.
Sounds good. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your scrolling, your downloading, or your clicking pleasure. Whatever you do to find us, your loyalty is much appreciated. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Hope you enjoyed episode number 166. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of the web to your screen. Come on, Paul and Ringo. Come together.